back in 2010, life was good for Mike Burton. He was enjoying life, studying acting, and looking forward to fulfilling his dreams. When everything changed, and Mike became a medical mystery. Now, Mike joins me now on the line. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you doing? You okay?
I'm well, thanks. So you're a medical mystery?
A medical mystery, yeah. Yes, I lost the majority of my eyesight in the space of about 2 weeks back in December 2010.
I mean, had you any precursor? Did you know there was something going wrong?
I had started with some floaters in my left eye. But I've been doing long days and sort of rehearsing a lot at drama school, so I thought it was just tiredness. And then I went for an eye test. Finally, went for an eye test on a Saturday after rehearsing, and the guy covered my right eye and asked me to read off the sign, and I couldn't even see the sign to read any letters off it.
And did you realise your sight was that bad?
No, I had no idea. Mm-hmm. Literally just a couple of floaters. Like, you know when you look at a light and you get the coloured bits in your eyes? Mm. I just noticed a couple more of them than normal. Until I went to the eye test and realised how bad it had got.
And then over a 2 week period, basically most of your sight disappeared.
Yeah, I was admitted to the Royal Free Hospital in London, and they kept me in doing test after test. So the first thing they discovered was that my optic nerves had swollen up, but they couldn't figure out why. So over that sort of 2 week period, my eyes got gradually worse. I left the hospital. They gave me a course of steroids, which didn't really do anything. I left just in time for Christmas. I could still see sort of that at that point, but by New Year, I couldn't really see anything.
And would you say you were in denial about your sight loss, do you think, up until that point?
Potentially denial. I was probably in denial for quite a lot of it, because while I was in the hospital, I didn't even really, none of the emotion really hit me until I got home to my family for Christmas. And I could still sort of navigate out of the peripheral, out of my very, I had a very small amount of peripheral vision that I was sort of navigating my way through the world with. And it was sort of, I was, as you mentioned in the introduction there, I was sort of living my dream, really, being at drama school. I guess the sense I had was that because I hadn't had any reason why it had gone away, I had no reason that it wouldn't come back. So I thought, well, I'll go back to drama school and carry on studying.
It's funny, people listening might think we're talking about denial with sight loss. People might think that sounds ridiculous, but you've just summed it up there. You're thinking, well, there was no reason why it's gone, so there's every chance it will come back. Let's not accept this, because this is my dream, this is what I want to do, and I'm not letting it go.
Yeah, that was exactly it. And it was sort of a sense, the big thing for me as well was like I didn't want to lose my friends. It was that thing of like, well, I can either carry on being, you know, being the same person that I am, or end up being a kind of, I guess the worry was becoming a pity case, or sort of feeling like, you know, the friends you had just started looking after you, and then that's, you could become a burden.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of us living with sight loss, we grapple with that at times. Being an actor, though, and studying acting, I mean, that must have thrown up some real challenges if you're learning lines and things and you're used to reading it.
Yeah, so I used to bribe my friends, like take them out for dinner and then be like, could you record all my lines from Macbeth into a dictaphone? Weirdly enough, I got offered my first professional acting job whilst I was in hospital, so I took the month of January off from studying to do my first professional production with a director I'd worked with before. And it was during rehearsal, we were stood there one day about to run a scene. This is when they had enlarged the text for me so I could still sort of see. And then one day we were about to read and I just went, I can't see any of this. And he just came up to me and gave me a hug, which was really nice. But there were a lot of challenges. I lost props on stage quite a lot during productions. But during that show, actually, it was quite a highbrow show, and they had a metaphor of a tree at the back of a stage for the whole production, which was meant to represent sort of like the tree of life. And I just knocked that over during one production.
Another metaphor.
Yeah, another metaphor. I lost my dagger during the Macbeth scene. I was doing, is this a dagger I see before me? And then I went to pick up my own dagger and couldn't find it.
So what did you say? No.
Definitely not. Move on.
I mean, it's all right laughing about it, but you know, these are frustrating things. Did the director persevere? Did you finish the part that you'd taken on?
Yeah, I did, and it went really well. There was no one who saw the show could tell that I had vision problems.
Fantastic.
I guess, you know, you talk about frustration there. The weird thing I noticed was that the frustration started to come in more when vision started returning a little bit, because I guess it becomes more of a reality then, if that makes any sense.
No, explain that, because, I mean, how long did you live like this with virtually no sight?
About a year, and then it slowly started coming back. So I couldn't tell you exactly, you know, the exact time frame, because I guess it was always on a very, very, very slow thing. But in terms of that frustration, it was a sense that, you know, when it was really bad, I was just sort of getting through. And I guess there was almost a, it was just a case of getting through. And then when it started coming back a little bit, that's when all the frustrating things, because you start to think you can see again, but you can't. So you start, you get a little bit of your vision back. You're like, I must be fine now, and then you still bump into things, or, you know, can't find things.
Now, I noticed in the story that you didn't want to use a white cane or think about a guide dog at the time either.
Yeah, it's that denial thing, I guess, where it didn't really cross my mind. I mean, I don't know how long that would have gone on for, because, as I say, it was about a year. If it had been much longer than that, I guess I would have just had to be like, okay, this can't stay as it is.
You've mentioned your friends. I mean, you seem to have had quite a good group of friends around you.
Yeah, they were great. They were great, and I just wanted the friendship to sort of stay the same, because our whole relationship was sort of, you know, we were students, like 20, 21, 22, so we were just joking around, messing around with each other a lot. Like, you know, we're kind of, the best way to show affection a lot of the time is kind of to insult each other or take the mick out of each other. So I was really pleased that that didn't change, because often you think that when something like that's going to happen, people often mistake friendship to be like, oh, you've got to make adjustments and be, but sometimes the best thing you can do is not change and just keep as it's always been.
Mind you, your friends still played some tricks on you, didn't they?
they did indeed. Their favourite one was, if I put a glass down, they would just move it about maybe 6 inches and then watch me pat around to try and pick it up.
Now, to a lot of people, they might think that's really cruel, but, you know.
I don't think it was cruel, because they always had my back when other people would do things. You know, when people I didn't know would just be like, people love to ask how many fingers I was holding up, or they were holding up. So they would, they'd greet me and they'd say, oh, Mike's got bad vision. They'd be like, oh, really? How many fingers am I holding up? And they'd be like, yeah, my friends would have my back on that, and be like, don't do that. It's annoying.
It's a funny one, that, because I noticed that. It's funny, people who know me well, you know, and they know the world we live in, they don't, we can have a laugh about something that happens due to my sight, but it's not laughing at me or making a fool of me. But sometimes when somebody who doesn't know me well comes in and starts cracking jokes about blindness and oh, you can't do that, and I find that really gets my goat, and I think, you don't know me well enough to do that, you know?
Yeah. And they used to, and it's, I guess when your friends are like, they're cooking for you and they're manoeuvring me around puddles and stuff, you know, that's a real help, and that's real friendship.
Your sight has obviously, it's returned. It's not fully returned though, has it?
No, I've still... Do you remember before TVs went digital?
Yeah. You get the snowy picture. Thank you very much. Yeah. No, you've got the snowy picture if you've not got the aerial in or something.
Yeah, it's a little bit like, it's a little bit like a slightly out tune. I've got like lots of very fine green, red, blue sort of specks all over my visual field. So that's probably the best way I could describe it. I feel like I'm constantly, because the damage is on the optic nerve, I feel like I'm just permanently looking past it.
Yeah, and one thing I was wondering about was, you had some good experiences, didn't you? You danced with Amy Winehouse and didn't realise it.
Yeah, so while I was, this is probably when I got a tiny bit of my vision back, but not too much, so I'm a peripherals. I was drunk in Camden with some friends, and they were all girls, so I was like, I'm just going to go dance. And I went back and they were gobsmacked, and they were like, you've just danced with Amy Winehouse. So I started swinging this girl around, not really knowing what I was doing. I'm not a good dancer either, I'm terrible. I went back to them and they were like, you just danced with Amy Winehouse. And I didn't realise, I didn't believe them until later on when she, out the side of my vision, saw her and she high-fived me and was like, nice dancing.
Amy Winehouse?
Amy Winehouse, yeah.
claim to fame. That would be great if you'd appreciated it. One thing I noticed as well is one thing you said, that sometimes you could look down and, let's take for instance a wine glass, and you don't see it, and then somebody says there's a wine glass there, then you see it.
Yeah, when my vision first came back, it felt like my brain had to learn to trust my eyes again. So if I was holding a wine glass, I could put it down, and then when I went to pick it back up, I wouldn't be able to see it. But as soon as if I said to somebody, "Oh, where's my wine glass?" they could just point to it and be like, "It's there," and I could see it fine again.
That must be a strange way to live, though. I mean, how are things now for you?
They're good. Mainly my sort of day to day activities aren't really affected too much. If I go to meet a friend and it's in, like, say, if it's in like quite a dimly lit bar or something, I still kind of panic when I walk in. Sort of those old triggers that happen when I walk in to meet somebody in like a busy place, and I'm like, it's almost like I stop looking because I'm just like, I don't know where they're going to be. But yeah, most of my friends know what to do. They just come over and go, "Hi, it's me."
Yeah, I know. I empathize. I get that as well. And, you know, somebody that didn't know me would think that I was just rude. But other people that know me know that I especially in bad light, I'm involved with music and things, and invariably I'm in places with very bad light and stages and stuff. And it takes friends to look out for you, because, you know, you don't know what the troubles are sometimes, or what the risks are sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. I do stand-up comedy as a hobby, and I'm always in darkly lit places. I also a lot of comedians message me like, "I walked past you the other day and you just ignored me." And I have to be like, "I didn't see you, sorry."
That's quite a handy excuse, isn't it?
Yeah, it works all the time. I wish I'd known that before I went blind.
Would you say you've learned anything from your sight loss experience?
Oh, so much, so much. I wouldn't really know where to begin with that. I learned a lot about friendship, as I say, and I probably learned some strange things about sort of limiting beliefs that you place on yourself. When my eyesight started to go, I was able to learn sort of like 40 pages of script just by reading it like a couple of times. It just went straight into my head. And so I learned quite a lot of weird things that sort of tested my assumptions about myself and what I think I can do.
And are you optimistic for the future, or do you just take it as it comes?
Yeah, I think I try and take it as it comes. I don't try to put too much thought into it, because, I mean, I guess everyone's eyes deteriorate a little bit over time, so that could be a bit worrying. They reach where they're at now, probably about 2015. So I feel like they've sort of leveled out now. But yeah, I get on with my day, and most of the time it's fine.
And when you go for a job, an acting job, do you feel that you should mention your sight limitations, or do you try and get around it?
That's a tough one. It's a tough one because I'm someone that I'm quite stubborn and probably a little bit too proud. So sometimes I kind of feel like, I don't want to be, it's a sympathy thing again. I feel like if I'm competing with somebody for a job, it's like it shouldn't just be because, I've got bad eyesight. But at the same time, if they want me to do a sight reading where I'm doing a script or anything, then I would have to say I can't really read it, because I'd start reading like a sort of like a 5-year-old.
I know exactly what you say. Yeah, it's like when somebody phones up and I say, "Look, hang on, I'll take a note of that."
That's a good idea. Yeah.
And I can't even.
I'm lucky. I have a really good memory. I have a very good memory, so that really helps me a lot. So I can learn things very quickly. I do stand up comedy now, so I do a double act. So most of the time, it's just stuff that we create ourselves. So I can memorize that really quickly. But I've always been lucky enough to have a really good memory. But the other thing you said about learning, I don't say it's a lesson, but losing it and then getting it back, you just appreciate things that you would normally take for granted so much more. I mean, I became fascinated by trees for a little while when I first got my eyesight back, because they're so kind of complex and ridiculous. It sounds almost like some kind of arty-farty, pretentious thing to say, but I remember just being like, when you haven't seen a tree for like a year and then like you see one, you're just like, "Oh my God."
No, that's a fantastic way to look at it, I have to say, to coin a phrase. And as you say, you don't want to be defined by your sight. You want to be you, Mike Burton, who happens to have visual problems in a secondary manner, don't you, really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think you are probably a very good stand-up comedian, I would imagine. But hopefully one day we'll get to experience that. But for the meantime, Mike Burton, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for sharing your story.
Take care.